my response to your first question is that why this escalation against free speech and academic freedom is so unbelievable and so unprecedented is because solidarity with Palestine is also unprecedented. We've never seen such an incredible mobilization across the board of solidarity with Palestine and opposition to this genocide. I mean, it's affecting the entire political system on and off campus in the United States. And I want to add real quickly, I know we're short on time, but I just want to add quickly that this particular document that we're talking about, this task force they formed, is aimed at campuses, but the larger campaign is against the entire U.S. public. So we know that corporations have not been hiring or have fired their employees. I have, you know, documents in front of me, if we have time to discuss it, from Apple, from Google. And by the way, a professor, just to give you a couple of examples, a professor at Texas Tech University was fired because of a social media post. A professor at Indiana University was barred from further teaching because he organized a Palestine activity on campus. But I want to give just a handful of examples of what has been going on around the country. And there are hundreds of these examples, but the most well-known is in Harvard and University of Pennsylvania. The presidents of those two universities were forced to resign, not because they were defending Palestinian lives, but simply because they did not crack down hard enough Palestine solidarity activities on their campuses. At Harvard, donors announced, multimillionaire donors announced that they were withdrawing hundreds of millions of dollars from their donations to Harvard. At Columbia University, at Barnard University, and many others, Jewish Voices for Peace and Students for Justice in Palestine have been banned. Just a few days ago, the University of Michigan announced that it was implementing this harsh new policy, which is basically extreme repression of any protest at the University of Michigan campus. At Claremont University, I'm speaking to you from Los Angeles. That's just a half hour's drive down the road. Students last week were peacefully protesting, and the university called in riot police. The riot police arrested students and expelled them from the university. At my own campus, University of California at Santa Barbara, about 3 weeks ago, the multicultural center, this vital center we have, this space we have to talk about issues of social justice, it put up a signage page. And so students putting up messages of solidarity with Palestine, against the genocide, against Zionism, the university took it down. It closed the multicultural center, and it opened up an investigation with possible criminal charges against students. So at New York University, a poetry reading was actually shut down. Disciplinary investigation was undertaken against those reading this poetry, and the whole campus was militarized. At Cornell, there was an arrest of peaceful protesters. At Northwestern, there was criminal charges launched against students who ran a student newspaper because they put up a mock article to make a political point. So this goes on and on. I've just given you a handful of examples, but really we're seeing the effective suspension of the U.S. Constitution on campuses across the United States, the militarization of those campuses.
Well, Professor Robinson, thank you for that. For this plan of Israel's to work that you've been describing, would you agree that it has certainly helped to have, as they do, define anti-Semitism so very, very broadly? And is it not also the case that the fact that the U.S. government has also now so broadly defined what constitutes anti-Semitic speech, that all of this plays into what the Israeli government is doing with this plan? In other words, any criticism of Israel becomes sort of automatically anti-Semitic. So, and then and as part of the same question, that leads me to wonder, to what extent is there an ongoing cooperation between the United States and or coordination with this Israeli plan, in addition to this harmony of such broad definition of the term anti-Semitism?
Yes, exactly. This conflation of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism lays at the very heart of the Israeli political persecution of the Palestine Solidarity Movement. And we have to see that, well, first of all, anti-Semitism is defined as discrimination against Jews or hatred and prejudice of Jews. That has absolutely nothing to do with Zionism. Zionism is a right-wing political project. It's what we call racial nationalism. Israel has made now the definition of anti-Semitism an international political background. It's lobbied in the last few decades all around the world to have the definition of anti-Semitism changed from being discrimination against or hatred and prejudice of Jews to something else, which I'll mention in a minute. But I want to say why we're doing this is to criminalize Palestine solidarity. And Zionism was born in the late 19th century. It was part of a wave in Europe of what we call racial nationalism. And this racial, the Zionists, they take great offense when you make any comparison between Nazi ideology and Zionist ideology, but they are actually cousins. They both grow out of this movement of racial nationalism in the late 19th century. Not just Nazism and Zionism, but here in the United States, Manifest Destiny was the U.S. version, for instance, of racial nationalism. Where the U.S. government comes in this story is that the State Department in 2006, it changed the definition of anti-Semitism. It used to be just what I said, discrimination against Jews, hatred of and prejudice of Jews. Instead, it adopted this Israeli definition. Let me now define for you the U.S. State Department definition, which is simply parroting the Israeli definition. Anti-Semitism is delegitimizing Israel. That's an actual quote. Anti-Semitism is, quote, denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination by claiming that the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. Now, let me explain that the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. Racism and inequality and Jewish supremacy is enshrined into the political system and the whole legal system in Israel. The State Department definition also parrots the Israeli definition by saying it's anti-Semitic to draw comparisons of contemporary Israel policy to that of the Nazis. But again, that's historically very, very important and analytically correct parallels there. So the whole point of saying that pro-Palestinian solidarity, anti-genocide positions is anti-Semitic, the whole thing is intended to have this chilling effect where journalists, politicians, academics, and students, even Palestine solidarity activists, are so intimidated that they will self-censor out of fear of losing employment, out of ruining their reputation, or of any other sanctions that can be leveled against them. And I've already described some of the sanctions on U.S. campuses taking place right now, but also off U.S. campuses, and I've previously mentioned people have been fired, people haven't been hired. So that's the role of the U.S. government in collapse. But there's more about the U.S. government.